It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. I am Andrew Cohn.
I'm Ryan Zook.
And I'm Aaron McMahon.
Michigan football begins next week. We've got the latest on the primetime matchup with Minnesota, as well as some key freshmen to watch. That and more on the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. Aaron, Ryan, thanks for, we're recording this a little later than we had intended, hashtag dad life,
Dad life. Aaron and I don't know nothing about that yet.
I actually want to start with something just completely kind of odd, which is did you watch any college football this past weekend and see the mask wearing or lack thereof of the coaches on the sidelines? It was just absurd.
Yeah, it caught my eye.
Yeah, in particular, the Tennessee-Georgia game. I believe that's who they played. The Tennessee coach, Jeremy Pruitt, was just, if you haven't seen it, it's just, it'll give you a laugh, I guess. It's a serious thing, but, the way that he is, he's got this, it's not the true, just small mask. It's the, I guess, like the gator mask, they call it, like a bigger type thing, but he's not wearing it. He's covering everything on his head and face except his nose and mouth, pretty much. He's just wearing it like a hood, like kind of like a hoodie, but pulled over. I just don't know who told him that's, I could see in March if you were a little confused about how it was supposed to go, but at this point, you kind of wonder. But it did get me thinking. The Big Ten's about to come back. It'll be interesting to see those coaches and, the one we cover here, Jim Harbaugh. He's been certainly touting his program's diligence in this regard to kind of just their handling of COVID and the mask wearing and social distancing and just, the stay positive, test negative that he keeps saying. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see if he, sticks to it on the sideline.
We've seen the NFL fine coaches and teams for their coaches not wearing or incorrectly wearing the mask. So I think the NCAA, I don't think would have, I don't think they could do it, but I'm sure the individual conferences could if they choose to, but we haven't seen any individual conference do that yet. And I don't know how they would enforce it. How much are they going to fine them, and where's that money going to go? And everything
right,
else.
Right.
And it's not like COVID-19 has just disappeared from college football. Baylor had 40 cases within its program this week. That is just insane.
For all the people that are saying, they're being constantly tested. They're tested, before the game, and then they're outside and, whatever. It's like, well, clearly it still exists though. It's still out there and getting transmitted. So, maybe not on game days themselves, but still.
It's important to remember that tests don't create or transmit the virus. The virus is caught doing other things, whether it's going out to dinner with someone or conversing with someone through a store or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Tests only catch the virus. They can't prevent them. So that's the thing. We forget sometimes these are college kids. They are going to do other things. They're going to go out with friends, and it's going to come down to discipline. Which team is more disciplined in their out of practice activities. So we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if you're gonna see a handful of Big Ten games probably canceled at some point. And I don't think the Big Ten has done a very good job of putting themselves in a position to try and get out of that situation, playing 9 games in 9 weeks.
Yeah.
We've seen a handful of games postponed. And I think you're gonna continue to, especially as the fall turns into the winter.
Yeah, and Harbaugh's a guy that likes to certainly get on the refs. So, I mean, will he feel that he, you know, can still have his point heard without, you know, pulling his mask down? Because that's where I've seen it from the coaches a lot, is they start to get up in the refs' face. And I don't know, I guess they feel like they're not loud enough with it on, so they pull it down. But anyway, as we go from that kind of like negative talk of, you know, games being canceled to, hey, Michigan's opener is just a week away. We now have a time for it. It is a 7:30. Correct. 7:30 Eastern.
7:30 Eastern time, 6:30 locally in Minneapolis. So yeah, it'll be prime time on ABC under the lights.
On Saturday, which is an important Saturday distinction night. Because there are Friday games. I mean, there's one right away, Wisconsin, Illinois, I believe is the first one, you know, a week from this Friday. And then, you know, the Big Ten released a schedule kind of like randomly. I mean, it's like, here's all the week one times, and then here's a few others for you. You know, here's some Friday games, and here's some, you know, the Michigan Ohio State game we've got a time for. Are those all the Friday games? Is that your assessment of it? Is it there's not going to be any more necessarily? Because
I would assume, but I don't know. It's tough to say with these TV deals. These networks essentially decide the games, you know, 12 to 14 games ahead of time. Mm-hmm. They could probably theoretically pick more Friday games, but I think for the Big Ten to do that, I do think they need those schools to agree to it in some capacity. So it's tough to say. I wouldn't be surprised if they add more. But for now, I mean, I think you got enough as it is.
Yeah. Michigan had said a while ago, I remember they weren't going to do those Friday night games back, but this was back before the pandemic when they were just talking about having Friday night games just for the heck of it. You know, this year is a little different. I'm not sure if they could just say we're not doing it, but yeah, Michigan does not have any of those scheduled, at least from the initial release, but it is a prime time game. I don't know. The fact that it's at night isn't really as scary anymore for an opponent because, you know, there's no fans in the stands. So, or at least very, very minimal fans as far as, you know, maybe family and friends or whatever, but you know, they're not going to have that rowdy atmosphere that you would otherwise going to.
It's going to be weird. Minnesota. It's going to be weird.
And they're not, you know, they're used to this. I mean, they played three night games last year, including one on the road at Penn State, obviously under different circumstances, like you mentioned the crowd and mm-hmm. everything else. I think the one negative, I think from the players and coaches standpoint for these night games is this kind of gets them out of a routine. Yep. Now, I think this is different because it's the first game of the season. So they haven't really been able to get into that game day routine, so to speak. But if you talk to coaches and players, I think most of them, or maybe not so much players, but definitely the coaches, they would prefer that more traditional noon or early afternoon kickoff because they're a more regular team. They get up early in the hotel, they bus over, they play the game, they finish the game, and then they head home. Whereas with the night game, it's everything is kind of pushed back. You're sitting there watching other games on TV all day happen, and then you finally get out there to play at night. You play a three, 4 hour game, and then you got to get on the plane and go home. You don't get back until early in the morning. So it kind of screws everything up just from a scheduling standpoint. But, you know, there is obviously excitement. You know, players do want to play at night under the lights. There's an added feeling of specialness to that. Mm-hmm. And all eyes, you know, from a college football perspective, or most of them at least, will be on Michigan, Minnesota on next Saturday night.
And I know you're a big proponent of night games as well, Aaron.
Now, for us, I feel bad complaining about this because we're just sitting there watching a football game. We're getting paid to write about it. But folks don't realize, too, like we get there like 3 hours, 2 to 3 hours before kickoff, and then we don't leave the press box. You know, I'm lucky if I leave the press box 3 hours after a game. Usually it's closer to 4 hours. So for a night game, luckily, you know, Minneapolis is central time, so the game will start 6:30 there. But, you know, I won't get out of the press box till 1, 2 in the morning. So it's a late night. It screws up my sleeping schedule too. So
Hey, well, he doesn't have to feel too bad. He's definitely not alone in not liking the night games. There are plenty of fans, you know, that don't like him either. Now, when you say the press box, we don't know for sure exactly what the heck's going to happen this season in that regard. But we'll be talking about Minnesota more next week, I would imagine, but I don't think there's any harm in giving a little bit of dedicating some time to them. You know, they're a good team. I mean, this is PJ Fleck's fourth year now. They went 11-2 last year, you know, with the Outback Bowl win over Auburn. Yeah, I mean, this team brings back a lot, including possibly, you know, the best quarterback in the conference, not named Justin Fields. You know, they lose their star running back, but bring back, you know, the best receiver in the conference too. So there's a lot to like about this Minnesota team. And it's definitely not, you know, not maybe the ideal game for a Michigan team with a lot of new pieces in week one.
Yeah, you hit it. I mean, they got some fire on offense. They can score points. They can get down the field. How Michigan responds, I think, is going to be interesting to see, given all the new pieces in the defensive backfield. We still don't know who's going to take up that second starting cornerback spot. Some names are being thrown out there at this point, but Michigan is, I'm curious to see how they play back there. I think that's going to be the weak link of the defense, how they're able to keep up, if they're able to keep up with Rashad Bateman, who I think is one of the best receivers, not only in the Big Ten, but in the country. You know, had he opted out and not played this year, I still think he would have easily been a first round pick in next year's NFL draft. He's a talented guy. Michigan's going to, they would have had their hands full with him last year. Now this year with fewer guys and fewer experience in the backfield, they're going to be tested. You know, and same thing with Michigan's offense. I mean, we haven't seen many of these guys, whether it's Joe Milton starting at quarterback, whether it's Cade McNamara, who ends up starting up front the offensive line. They're going to be tested on the road against another Big Ten team. And that's the thing here. Remember, yes, Michigan was supposed to start open the season against Washington. You know, at the same token, they had a few other non-conference teams to kind of get ready for the Big Ten season. That's not the case now with this 9-game season. It's you're starting the Big Ten season right away. You're getting going right away, and we're, you know, and they're not going against, you know, an Illinois or a Rutgers right away. It's Minnesota, who arguably is one of the better Big Ten teams last season.
Absolutely, yeah. And Aaron, you know, you mentioned the some of the questions in the defensive backfield. Let's kind of transition there. Harbaugh on the radio earlier this week, you know, kind of threw a new name into the mix to potentially, you know, grab one of those spots.
Yeah, he went on the Inside Michigan Football Radio Show Monday night. He does most weeks. He was asked about the defense. He didn't say a ton newsworthy, but he did say that, you know, safety Sammy Falston, redshirt freshman, played in a handful of games last year, mainly on special teams. He has been moved from safety to cornerback. Now that tells me it signals, and we've had a lot of conversations in recent weeks about the cornerback position. A lot of names there, a lot of guys vouching for that second spot. It sounds like they haven't found someone yet. Now Don Brown, I think last week, said Jamon Green was the leader in the clubhouse there, but the fact that they've moved Faustin over within the last week tells me that they're concerned about the position. They got several guys, like I said, there. DJ Turner's name has come up. Jalen Perry's name has come up. A lot of names there, not a ton of experience, and no one who's really, shown to be a reliable, option back there yet.
Yeah, and going against Bateman week one, who averaged over 20 yards per reception last season in total over 1,200 yards. So, I mean, that guy is elite. So they're, like you said before, they are going to have their hands full week one.
And Ryan and I have been debating about this the last few days, but I'm curious. I'm really curious to see how Michigan defends against Minnesota next week. If they go with a five back defensive backfield, if they, you know, double up Rashad Bateman with Daxon Hill as a, you know, a nickelback, they've got a lot of options there. And like I said, a lot of names, but no one that I think that could really hold up with someone like him. Now, had Ambry Thomas not left, I think Ambry would have been the obvious answer there to pair up against Bateman. But Bateman's, he's tall, he's big, and he's quick. He can move. Michigan's, it's going to be a tough task. I'm curious to see how they defend him, because if they let him get free and they let him have a big game, Michigan's going to be in trouble, I think.
The game within the game, as they say. Okay, and then, you know, you're talking about, you know, one freshman there in Faustin who could be seeing the field. We've got you know, others as well that could be in the mix for some actual playing time. And Ryan, you wrote a thorough story on this. I enjoyed it. I actually, I'll admit, I did not read it when it first came out. I missed it. But in preparation for this podcast, I did, and I learned a lot. So yeah, I guess if you could kind of kickstart the conversation on who are some of these, you know, freshmen that might see the field and actually be effective for Michigan here in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's going to be a lot of true freshmen that see the field for Michigan this year, not only because they are really inexperienced from last year, but I mean, they don't have to worry about any redshirt rules this season. It's not going to count against the year of eligibility for any player. So, last year, Michigan had 8 true freshmen burn the redshirt, but I could see even more playing this season. I don't know how much of a role they will have, but I pinpointed 5 guys that I think could have not a huge impact this season, but could definitely see the field and be relied upon in 2020. And I think it starts with the freshman receivers, Roman Wilson and AJ Henning. I mean, obviously with Nico Collins gone and plus Tariq Black and Donovan Peoples-Jones, in that gone. I mean, they need someone to step up, and there's only six scholarship receivers right now. And coaches have raved about Henning and Wilson so far in preseason. And they're going to have to show that they can be relied on and catch the ball. But, I mean, their speed and their athleticism can't be denied. So it will be interesting to see how they're utilized. I mean, I think Wilson might be more of a deep threat than Henning, but Henning could be used in a multitude of ways, whether that's on jet sweeps or put him in the slot and run some bubble screens with him. He could be a versatile weapon for Michigan. So I think it starts with those two guys. And linebacker Nakia Hill-Green was a three-star guy coming out of high school, but he enrolled early and kind of got in the program before some of these other guys. And whether it's been Cameron Grone or Josh Ross, I mean, they've hyped Hill-Green up a lot so far. And same with Don Brown, mentioned that he's in the mix and could be in for a backup role right away. So look for his name this year. And Blake Corum's another guy. And he's part of a crowded running back room, but his skill set is more of a Chris Evans type, being able to catch the ball out of the backfield and make some people miss in open space. So I'm sure Chris Evans will be the number one receiving threat out of the backfield this year, but it definitely sounds like Corum is going to have some sort of role either on offense or on punt return too. So he's an explosive player that can rattle off some big plays when needed. So I don't know if Aaron wanted to weigh in on a couple of these guys too that he thinks could stand out.
Yeah, I mean, it's important to look at when you're looking at true freshmen engaging, whether or not they're going to play. I think you have to start at the position group they're in. If that position group is deep and experienced, you can't expect them to play much. They're just not going to fit in there. There's not going to be enough reps for them to get in. And in the positions you just mentioned, Ryan, receiver and linebacker are relatively thin. You mentioned the scholarship situation at receiver. It's a similar situation at linebacker, where there's some guys there, but not a ton of experience beyond Cam McGrone and Josh Ross. So right now, you know, I released my projected depth chart a couple of weeks ago, but I had Nakia Hill-Green in there as a backup at the weak side, the will behind Josh Ross. So, you know, if should an injury go down or something happen to Josh Ross, Nakia will probably be in there right away. So I think that's key in analyzing these guys and their ability to play right away. But special teams is key too. I mean, if you've got speed and ability, the coaches will try and find a way for these guys to get on the field, as we saw last year and in previous years. A couple of the names, I think you mentioned Blake Corum. Michigan intends, and Jay Harbaugh said this last week, they intend to play Blake Corum right away. They've already got a deep running back room. But I don't think in this situation where there's so many unknowns, the quarterback and the offensive line, I don't think you can't have enough running backs willing and able to play for Michigan. Between coronavirus and the mysteries on offense, I think they're going to legitimately try and use three and four backs. In fact, Jay Harbaugh said at one point that they have sets in that have two running backs on the field at once. So that, I think that opens the door for Blake Corum. Makari Page is another guy that's come up as a potential second or third string safety. And given Michigan's struggles in the defensive backfield with depth, especially at corner, if you see one of some of these safeties move over to play corner like Sammy Faustin just did, it kind of opens the door here for a Makari Page or another potential safety that plays well in camp to get some reps and see playing time.
And Ryan mentioned this right. Sorry, Ryan mentioned this right away, but I think it's important to reiterate the thing about eligibility, because it's just something that coaches don't have to worry about at all. Now, I think, I don't know if it was last year, 2 years ago, when the whole four game thing kicked in, that was a huge step. Okay, a couple of years ago, I mean, that was a huge step in allowing programs to play guys with less concern about burning that red shirt, because they could get them on the field for four games, and as long as they didn't exceed that, it didn't count. But to have no games at all, you get a free year. I think that's huge, because right from the start, you don't even have to have a clock. Literally the first game, you can be putting guys out there if you want, with no concern if they don't pan out or whether they do. There's just it's not going to affect anything going forward. So
and they might have to. Remember, this is a unique year with the coronavirus. If a couple of players end up having to sit out or they get infected and they have to quarantine, And Jim Harbaugh and some of the assistants have addressed this, that, you know, they're preparing not only the first and second stringers, but the true freshmen and the guys on the back of the depth chart. They have to be ready to go just in case something were to happen. So this is going to be a unique year just in terms of, I think, seeing guys play and utilizing true freshmen and everything else. Because before, like you said, there's the 4-game limit where you can kind of get their feet wet and see what they could do in a live game situation. And then you can kind of gauge from there whether or not you want to continue playing them or not. Now you can just throw them out there and see what you got. And if it works, great. It sticks, you keep playing them. And if not, you know, you got other players to go. So this, I'm curious to see how they juggle this true freshman recruiting class situation.
And another key misconception that goes along with true freshmen is, a lot of people think that, okay, the highest ranked freshmen will play first, but that's not always the case. I mean, people forget that recruiting rankings don't necessarily always mean take into account college readiness. I mean, a lot of these players project to be top players in the future, but that doesn't necessarily mean that from day one, they're going to be ready to step on the field and make an impact right away. And another thing too, is a lot of these guys that we mentioned, Mekari Page, Nakai Hill-Green, Blake Corum, they were all early enrollees. So they're able to get, I mean, there wasn't spring practice this year, but they're able to get in the program earlier, start their weight training earlier and be around the program. And that experience is crucial to be able to see the field early on in their career. So it should be, that's another main factor when thinking, trying to project who might see the field early on.
Another name I'm going to throw out there too. His name has come up quite a bit at Viper. He's probably second or third in the depth chart at this point. William Mohan, I don't know how he's pronounced it, but he's impressed.
Apache Mohan.
Yeah, his nicknames are thrown out there quite a bit. Don Brown said they call me Apache. But he's shown flashes of good things in practice. He's got really good speed. I think Brian Jean-Marie the other day on the radio, the new linebackers coach, was talking about Mohan. And he said, obviously, he doesn't have everything together just from a playbook perspective. And he's still trying to, I think, bring everything in. But he's got the speed that's able to play at the Big Ten Division I level. So they could throw him out there and see what they got, especially in pass rushing situations where they're trying to get to the quarterback. So he could be in there as well. I wouldn't rule out Andre Selden at some point, especially if they need help at nickel. So there are several of these guys on this list. I'm just going up and down the 2020 recruiting class list. Several of these guys can see the field at some point, especially this season.
Yeah, and Mohan was another example of a guy that was a three-star prospect coming out of high school. I spoke with his high school coach today, and I mean, playing in Brooklyn, New York, not necessarily a hotbed of college prospects. I mean, Erasmus Hall is a top program in the state, but his coach thought he was overlooked out of high school, but I mean, he was absolutely dominant. His junior and senior year had 13 sacks both years. And he believes that he can step in right away and was one of the most fiercest players he's ever coached on the defensive side of the ball. I wouldn't be surprised if you see Mohan in there, even if it's on special teams. Those kind of tenacious players, Don Brown likes to use them on special teams as well. So definitely look for his name to be called on a few occasions in 2020.
I think right off the bat, to me, the guys that jump off the paper in terms of playing right away and immediately and with volume, I think have to be the receivers, Henning and Wilson. I think just based on the lack of depth at receiver and the offense that Michigan plays with, you're going to see those guys on the field quite a bit, especially if an injury happens to another one of the receivers. Obviously, Michigan's got Ronnie Bell back. That's great. He provided for a lot of production last year. But keep in mind, Sam Ristill and Giles Jackson, while they looked good at times last year, they haven't proven themselves yet either as number two, number three options. So you're going to see, I think, a lot of internal competition there with some of those younger guys, especially the slot positions. So I would not be surprised if you see those guys early on the field week one against Minnesota, you know, running routes and trying to get open.
And yeah, look how much like the Sanders Stills and the Giles Jackson and Cornelius Johnson, they saw the field a decent amount as freshmen too. And that was with Peoples Jones and Nico Collins and Tariq Black and Ronnie Bell already there. So, I mean, and imagine how much that they could utilize Henning and Wilson when those experienced receivers are gone. So yeah, I definitely agree there.
and close with just a little basketball talk, only because tomorrow, Wednesday, the 14th, is the first official day of practices for the season, which is supposed to start November 25th. We don't know any of the games at this point, kind of waiting on the Big Ten to at least, you know, put out a schedule. I wouldn't be surprised if Michigan tries to, you know, host its own, you know, tournament for non-conference games, and then, you know, just play its Big Ten schedule as, you know, as it always has. But we did get to talk to, I think even from the last podcast, talking to Juwan, and then today talked to Isaiah Livers and Franz Wagner. You know, I asked Isaiah, like, hey, if, you know, you had a game tonight, who would be the starting five? And, you know, he said, you know, him along with Eli Brooks, Mike Smith, Wagner, and Austin Davis, which is not really a surprise if you kind of just look up the, you know, look at the makeup of the roster and the positional groups and who's returning. You know, that wasn't a shocker by any means. Of course, we have, you know, more than a month until the games actually begin, so there's time for that to change. But, you know, that's what he said for now. So Mike Smith, a graduate transfer, you know, presumably there in the backcourt at point guard, and, you know, with Eli Brooks, a returning starter, as well as Franz, a returning starter, and then Austin Davis kind of filling in for, you know, the void left by John Teske at center. But they'll certainly need a freshman to step in there. If it's going to be one, it's going to be Hunter Dickinson at some point, you know, at that backup center role. So that's just something to look forward to as practice begins tomorrow for the season.
It feels so weird thinking about basketball season when the football season hasn't even started yet.
I know it is. But yeah. And you're going to have more of that. Well, not necessarily more of the overlap than normal. It'll just be interesting with the start of the season where football will be at that time. I guess who really knows, but yeah, official practices can start. They'll start doing more 5-on-5 stuff. Yeah. With, you know, coaches on the court more, and just more time with the players here as we get going. So yeah, that wraps it up for this episode of the Wolverine Confidential Podcast. Thanks for listening.